kurayirwa usavarayirwe rega kuvarayirwa uyeverwa
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Tuesday, February 11th at 5:30 p.m. This will be a hybrid meeting. It will be held at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if...
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Muchacha.
Ambete washtelo, chante washte na page use up yellow. Lay unkipiki he washtelo. Greetings, good day. I welcome you, my relatives, and I shake your hands with a good heart. It's good for all of us to be here. This is First Voices Radio, National International, and I'm Teokasin Ghost Horse. Sending you greetings and strength. First Voices Radio is an all native hosted, all native produced, and it is produced by Liz Hill, a member of the Red Lake Ojibwe Nation. Our guest today, a conversation with Jonathan Gonzalez, who was born in Tuxtepec, Oaxaca, Mexico, and grew up in Southern California. He spent the last 12 years learning earth living skills and ancestral ceremonial ways with many teachers and elders, combined with participating in indigenous earth-based ceremonies, along with a quest to connect more deeply with his ancestral lineage, which is indigenous Taino from Puerto Rico and Chinateco from Mexico and African. And we talk about many things today, a plethora of subjects, topics. Pay attention, it may be hard to follow. It may not be so hard to follow for some of you. And this is the beginning of a conversation with Jonathan Gonzalez. Was the Chief Jan Dan George said, there's an endless supply of humans, but a limited supply of human beings. So these are different ways. We could all just kind of catch up a little bit and then go into that a little deeper, and see how the transition, because your trip this last year of the fall time that you were here is a transition, stepping out of one dimension, going into another, and you don't know how. He's like, what's going on, right? You're supposed to be in winter, yet you have sunshine and warm, and yet I'm here, right? So your body has adjusted to being here, and yet it has to adjust to being there also. So there's this in between, this awkwardness that you could only express with, oh, what's going on? So yeah. It's the awkwardness.
So yeah. I was thinking about that. Yeah, because I know we've talked about when the Kogi had showed up somewhere to offer their, well, just to be, and somebody said, well, thank you so much. You've come so far, you've traveled so far from your home. And the response was something to the effect of that we never left, that we've always been home, that whether I'm here in this land that I'm at, or whether I was out in the East Coast, it's all one place. But all the dividing lines, all the, you know, the linear, the binary, the society, which has divided us into color spectrums, into different cultures, into different races, genders, all of these things that we want to label and identify, or that we are labeled and identified by this society, it's like separates us, and we forget, well, this is all our home, and this is, and what is that, when we can get to that place of this is, I've never left home, then I can start to sink into something like, oh, well, if I'm always home, then I can, well, my house, I have to get up and I have to make my bed and I have to take care of my responsibilities. Well, that's the same thing when I walk outside, but we're so binary. I'm inside, I'm outside. I'm here, I'm there. I'm black, I'm white. I'm all of these different labels. But what is it that we're truly failing to see because of the blinders that are on? Is that we're, you know, more of our similarities, I guess, rather than our differences? Because I'm here in this time, and which is limiting, but if I can just speak from that perspective, it's really interesting out here. It's really interesting in these times we find ourselves. You know, I'm not too far from these fires that happened in LA, and it's so confusing because everybody wants to point fingers and nobody wants to really go to the depths of why all of these situations are even happening. Same thing happened in Lahaina in Hawaii. You know, it was we have these fires, and it becomes about property, and it becomes about binary thinking. I own it, so I can do what I want with it. And if I don't own it, I can buy it, and then I can do what I want with it. And if I can't buy it, I'm going to do something to destabilize it so I can give the rest of the people who are looking on an excuse to get on my side and say, oh, that makes sense. Like, you should buy it. You have the money. You should buy it because you're speaking from the from a place of perceived superiority because you have this money, you know. So we're always stuck in this binary kind of this duality of thought. It's like, you can because you have money, and you have money, so you must be endowed with some kind of certain intelligence, and if you have that, then you must be more worthy of making these choices to affect life, affect your life, affect other people's lives. And you know, so it's just a real, it seems like a very confusing moment that we find ourselves in with all these transitions. And I feel really grateful to have kind of stepped into it fully and said, well, what am I really holding on to as far as my attachments that's keeping me in relationship with the earth? Well, it has so much less to do with my job and my rights My income, or even my well-being, but it has so much to do with just the being, just me being. And that's what we've like, as a society, it seems like we're failing to take note, to witness, and sometimes I think, well, what am I doing over here? And I know we've talked about the hamblecha, and it feels like sometimes I feel like, well, that's maybe not the only thing that I've done, because I don't want to put it in those terms, but it was the moment that maybe that was the moment for me that I was stepping out of the box. I was detaching myself from the attachment that I'm told that I have to have to our society, to work, 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 to always be doing, rather than to just sit with. And so I still feel sometimes that I stack up my like credits or my credentials to compare myself. And in a way, sometimes I even do that with the hamblecha, with the vision quest. It's like, oh, I see, now I can say that I've done something. But I don't wanna look at it like that, because it was not about doing something. It was about an awakening to my to being with, in the simplicity of the sunrise and the sunset, which seems so simple because we've taken it for granted for so many, many generations. But in fact, it's part of our creation. It's part of our breath. It's part of every element that holds us up and carries us through the day. Well, we can't do that without the sunshine, nor can we do that with Mother Earth under, with us as we continue to breathe and drink and eat. And so the simplicity of something so phenomenally huge, like the sunrise, which even in that, saying it like that, the sunrise, because the sun's not rising, right? But we've become so accustomed to this way of speaking, which has affected our way of thinking. And it affects our worldview. Our worldview, which is even a limiting thought in and of itself, because it keeps us here, human-centric, earth-centric, not even earth-centric, world-centric, right? Because I think that the difference between earth and the world is a very pronounced difference that that we just don't recognize in our way of speaking. So that's just a thought that came up about, like, well, if I feel stressed and struggling with what to do right now with the way the world is, well, maybe that's, I'm even asking myself the wrong question. Well, what do I do is maybe the wrong question.
Let's think linearly, for the listeners here, about how to be out of the box. So you felt the differences from being a former resident of Ulster County in New York. Then you moved to Southern California. The weather is different. The people are different, no doubt. To me, the people have adjusted to each landscape, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then you talk about the hamblecha. People don't know what a hamblecha means. I'll describe it shortly, that it's a, people say it's a vision quest, but it's beyond that. Then you talk about out of the box. Now, reason why I'm saying this out of the box, the hamblecha can take you out of the box. What brings you back to the box? What does this society try in effort, and we sort of forgive ourselves for making mistakes, which is kind of good, but yet we cannot, because it's gotten from other cultures, things like ayahuasca. Their attempts at being out of the box is temporary. it's rather a way of life rather than experimenting with it. And then you go on to simplicity and worldview and the human-centric, biocentric way of think. And to me, that's a key. In English, would say that's separating. But I often include the human, but not as a focal point, that they often are looking to be included, even in the biocentric world, which includes everyone. So there are humans, human beings around the world that are often always thinking biocentrically, including humans. They include humans, but when you're human-centered, you're only thinking about humans first, and everything else is below that. You just described, Jonathan, the matrix, that these are all kinds of ways of trying to find a dimensional way out from the effect of the programming we have here in this society, this civilization that is ruled by fear and scarcity. As long as we feed fear, the political structures, the religious structures, the governmental structures will all stay in place. And scarcity is created out of all three. So we are in abeyance to what it's asking for. We do the job for them. We pay the taxes, our money, in a sense, to pay them for our misery or comfort. And we're given tidbits of convenience, a new car. And so we think we're really free in a land that we Americans have taken away from the indigenous peoples to reach a culmination of chaotic thinking that, well, let's ship all the indigenous peoples back to where they came from. And yet, if you go back to the Mexican-American War, that was forced upon the Mexicans from the Texans, from the United States, to gain aggressively, acquire this land. Majority of the West was Mexico. But then you have to go deeper. Mexico itself was also Spanish. So this is just not Mexican or American or the United States. It's beyond that. But we're not allowed to go there because of this matrix. Long process of thinking. But you let me know what you think.
I mean, the fear and the scarcity, I think that it feels like that is the driving force behind this civilization, right? With property, if I don't give up my property, they're going to come for me. They're going to come for my women, my children, my family, my wife, all of these things. That, you know, it is that scarcity mentality that will allow somebody to take so much, to have so much less than they probably not I don't want to say deserve, but we all should be given. If there's so much, why is it that we are holding on to so little and we willingly give it over to the government for, like you said, our taxes or so to speak, our wages, our what is kind of like what we've worked for. And it reminds me of this I heard this about this professor who was doing this experiment for over 10 years in his class, and he was offering people on the final exam to give them all a 95. And over the course of 10, 11 years, no class ever accepted it because there was a few people that never wanted to relinquish any kind of power or control that they thought that they had over their own results. So the caveat to getting a 95 for the whole class, he said, everybody can get a 95, walk away, but you all have to agree unanimously. And because some people feel like, oh, I've worked for it and they don't deserve it, even though it could be given freely to all of us. And the stats show that most people including the 10%, we're not going to even get that 95. But yet, if I can't get what I think I deserve, I, me, and what I deserve, then you shouldn't either. No matter how hard you worked or if you worked harder or not. Like, if I can't get something, I'm still going to prevent you from getting it. Or even if I can, doesn't make sense that you get it for not earning it. So we have this issue of illegal immigration, illegal aliens, right? Oh, you didn't do it the right way. You didn't come into this country the right way, right? So there's this big narrative that they're drug dealers or murderers because it talks to the fear and to the scarcity. Like, so if you preach fear, like so many of the politicians do, so many people do, then we're gonna always be our DNA is gonna kick in and say, oh, we lost it once, we're gonna lose it again. And I see it happening all over here in Southern California. You know, the Mexican population here is, compared to especially Ulster County in New York, it's, you know, there's so many Mexican people here. And there's a lot of fear here. There's a lot of fear and finger pointing. And that scarcity, starting with property, and starting with their wages, but then, you know, oh, they're going to send me back, they're going to put me in jail. And it's hard to have a counterpoint when people always have this fear perspective that's driven constantly by, you know, the powers that be, our government.
This worldview, I would say earth view, is different. And so the fear that's created, often you fall into the worldview. What's going on? What can make me feel real out there? Oh, let's fear, we don't say it outright or even think it consciously, is that fear is makes me feel real. And think from video games to watching the news and even political structures, who did I fight for? And am I on winning side? So everything is given to us in the pill of the matrix. We're constantly trying to choose which pill to take. And the antidote, what is the antidote? We're so in search for the antidote by trying to fear, say it's okay to be angry, it's okay to have wars, it's okay to kill the earth without, because she'll always be here. Like, we can think for her. The fear that's instilled on Mexicans, people from other ethnicities, Asians, that are also so-called immigrants, have the same manifesting of I came to America to have, and permeation of colonization that set in from wherever they started, because there was the effect of capitalism or colonization in their countries also. So created poverty over there, scarcity, and sent them here to this country where you really find more vacancy of spirit than of materialism. Because you can, you know, walk down, but we think that's freedom of choice to choose a different color, to choose products. And then we're satisfied for a bit, but even Elon Musk are saying it's heaven to have lots of money, have no worries. They're as worried about not having as the poor folks who still have the same attitude of not having. It's the same dis-ease that creates fear and scarcity. So it doesn't, a formula that just doesn't fit one classified group of people. It's all throughout the system, because the system has created this. Whoever created the system continues. But when we get up in the morning and think about life differently, who are we naturally? At any laws, any religions that have been created, it never changed natural laws. And who are the peoples, the human beings, the biocentric thinkers, feelers, that are also understanding that we cannot change natural laws, no matter what legislation is out there. But we're led to believe that through our cunning laws and legislation, our war games, all these games, will actually change nature. It's herself. It's not true. So there's a big jump there in the gap of awkwardness, the awkwardness that exists, that we have as human beings or as humans have created because of the government and because of the religions and mostly basically the matrix.
Wow. That vacancy of spirit hit me really hard, along with the illusion of choice. Like, I can choose what spiritual path I want, but there's no source in that spiritual path. There's no culture, right? So it's like I can choose to, today I want to be a shaman from wherever. Well, I am from where I am, but I want to be a shaman that's teaching from jungle medicine, from the Brazilian rainforest or something like this. And I decide to eat the ayahuasca, and now I'm serving the ayahuasca. But it's because it's separate from the land and it's separate from the culture, and it's a shortcut or a bypass to something that they think is like, oh, I can find spirit in this because I'm missing spirit. We've talked about this before, that because you're shortcutting to culture, you end up creating cults. You're halfway there and you're satisfied because it's too much work to actually work on relationships, work on your relationships with the culture from which your ancestors come. And sure, what about the cultures who have provided this medicine, this sacred medicine, for thousands of generations, right? So it's like, oh man, I feel this vacancy of spirit. Maybe eating this plant is going to bring it into me, and maybe it will give you a glimmer, but without supporting the culture, a reciprocity of support within that culture, and apart from the land where these medicines or these ways of thinking or these ceremonies come from, we just continue to bypass, and we just try to find, we're looking for the pill, we're looking for the fix, right? Because that's what everybody is wanting to do. I want to fix this issue. I want to get my health right. I want to get my spirit right. I want to get my wealth in order. So what's the fix? What's the shortcut? Well, the most troublesome one is this vacancy of spirit, and how people are reaching into spirit and using it as a defense for their actions. I mean, you see it in the main religions, especially in this country, where they're wanting to now put prayer back in schools, right? Prayer in schools is a perfect example of this vacancy of spirit, but you're using the language of spirit to say that, oh, it's here all along. This is a God-fearing nation, right? This is a one nation under God, indivisible, right? We're using this language of God and spirit to say, look, we're gonna save you. And if you can't, because you clearly can't save yourself. So the government is, and the religions, especially the main religions, are going to come out and say, you're incapable of doing it. Let me tell you how to do it. And so here, come on Sunday, eat the sacrament, and your sins will be washed away, because you're going to go to your priest and you're going to say, I did this and I did that and I did the other thing. Okay, good boy. Bless you. Here's a couple of Hail Marys and Our Fathers. And go and be with God. It's just it's It's such a crafty way that we've funneled people into the illusion. And we keep on then just cycling, and like it's wash, rinse, repeat. Wash, rinse, repeat all the time.
A lot of people won't because that's just too heavy or mic drop language or negative, right? Mm. But to those who are continuing to listen to this, it's like, what do you talk about when you sit with people? Do you talk about the taxes only? Do you talk about your mortgage payments? Do you talk about things that you think you're responsible, but who are you really responsible to paying? And when it comes down to it, if you are not in line or programmed by that matrix, you live in fear of political and religious retaliation, which also promulgates fear and scarcity. I think you're onto something when you say, talk about cults. Cults don't create relationship, they create connection. The culture is an ongoing relationship, sustainable. And as you mentioned, looking for the land where this civilization comes from, where does it come from? This in the United States, where did the United States come from? You know, did it come from this land? Well, we could say, oh, the Iroquois Confederacy, but not really. That's, they distorted what they were really meaning and made it into an intentional definition for certain people. And it is, this, in this case, Europeans who came here with the fear of retaliation, religious and political retaliation already in place. And they brought it in the guise of laws and religion. And they laid it upon a land that those laws and religions don't come from, is to put it on a land where you have no idea what this land is about, where the people living here didn't need that so many laws or religions at all. So it was more of a relational, political relationship among humans, but it became more of a cultural relationship with Earth rather than just keeping it into a cult that flourishes for 10 years and becomes whoever monikers or names are applied to that way of thinking and excusing oneself to participate in it. So join us on the second half of First Voices Radio, a conversation with Jonathan Gonzalez. And you are listening to First Voices Radio. My name is Teokasin Ghost Horse.
second half hour with Jonathan Gonzalez, we talk about cults, culture, and civilization, and the differences in how different cultures are treated by cults and civilization. And now Jonathan Gonzalez, right here on First Voices Radio. My name is Tilkson Ghost Horse. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, oh, wow. It's almost like there's cults built upon cults built upon cults, and it's just a scatterwork of them. And I would almost say that it's as if this civilization, this society, is in and of itself a cult, because they've stripped away the true culture that the African slaves were bringing. They stripped away the culture of all the indigenous and original and free and sovereign people that were here on this land. And now they left with these ideas that come from a different place that aren't rooted in culture, but only rooted in power and domination via government and religion, religious authority, right? So it's like, it's almost this whole experiment that we might say that the United States of America is in of itself a cult. But we're so afraid to say that because we don't want to take a really hard look as a society and as a civilization, let alone individuals on their own. It goes back to the fear, you know? And so then thus starts this cycle over and over again. The fear is going to prevent me from looking too deep. If I don't look too deep, I need to attach myself to something, some idea, whether it's government or religion. And I'm going to be satisfied with that. And you know what? I'm just going to go on my day and try to be happy, bring happiness into my life via whatever it is, TikTok, Instagram, or shopping, drugs and alcohol, or something to just kind of dim down this voice inside of me that's saying, hey man, like, you need to stop doing, you need to check. And this is me saying it to myself, because I'm certainly in this society too. I am not above and I'm not outside and I'm not better. But what I want to focus on for myself is, how can I get to thinking, and where is like original thought coming from, and how can I bring that into my heart? And when I act and when I speak, speaking from the heart, from an original place, original thought, and I'm not saying that I have to create something to make it original, right? But I'm just saying something that is rooted in actual reality, not in this temporal state that we live in right now of this United States.
The idea of gaslighting that I often think about is, why are we afraid to say it beyond the lip service mentality? Oh, we're just saying it because it's almost where it's not our responsibility, it's somebody else's. In this way, we're manipulating our psychological methods into questioning their sanity without looking at ours through memories or even powers of reasoning, which I think we are doing here is powers of reasoning to really get down to why a lot of people are discontented with what is. Like you often talk about the binary factors that we're involved in. We're not allowed to go interdimensionally because time is one of the barriers.
I mean, when we talk about time and how limiting it is, we could be speaking another language to somebody else, because it's so off of the charts of what they're conditioned to, how they're conditioned to think about time. It being very concrete and very like scientifically proven in their way to almost without a doubt. But we know that when people go into space, something shifts in their biological DNA, that time has shifted somehow. that they actually are biologically younger now from going further out. So in a way, if you can physically go further out and adjust your time, there must be a way that we can spiritually go further out and adjust the time. And I think that is because, you know, the confines of our sense of what time is, well, we believe it, we allow ourselves to be to fall into it, and so we allow ourselves to be limited by it. But again, I love when I you know, whatever, however I feel about people going into space on their rocket ships and all of that, that's different. That's apart from people having already experienced that, coming back and having a whole new perspective. I think in a way it's like they've seen the creator. They've seen the creation in action because they were zoomed out. Right? They zoomed out so much, they could see this beautiful planet, and they can see the sun and the moon all in one, looking out of one window in their spacecraft, right? So what is the equivalent of doing that without ever leaving the place, the little hill that you're on? And I believe that is here too, but because of a fear, because of our limitations in our way of thinking and our conditioning, well, I'm not going to ever be able to get there. So what am I going to do? It's very trendy for young people right now. I want to travel. Travel for travel's sake. Right? Sure, I get experiencing other cultures, other peoples, other ways of thinking, because really you may not find that here if you stick around your small town USA. You know, you may not find somebody thinking culturally differently, spiritually differently, even governmentally differently, right? You may not find that. You may just find that back to the duality or that binary, Republican, Democrat, right? Independent, maybe, whatever that means. But it's like you become limited to one way of thinking that's all around you all the time. Okay, so now I just want to travel. Well, that need to travel is because you're expressing in some other way that discontent with where you're at because of going back to what you said about the vacancy of the spirit. Now, I've heard other people, even when we talk about Black Elk, right? The idea that the universe is everywhere. The center of the universe is everywhere. So this is a thought that people probably don't address when they're looking to travel. But if you go deep to the root of why am I traveling in the first place? Well, because I'm in search, because I'm discontent with being here, and I want to be somewhere else because I've not found contentment in the simplicity of what all of the beauty that is around me.
Well, this is interesting conversation for those who are listening. It's not just hyperbole. It's not exaggerated thoughts, but exactly living in order to understand, in this case, spatiality, that the vacancy of spirit, the people traveling to the sake of traveling, the shock that a lot of people, you read about it in, and they put it so romantically, but it hides the trauma of space to arrive upon a vast land, to arrive upon the prairie where you could see forever. It's like seeing the ocean for the first time. You can't understand or fathom that because you're in this rut of temporal thinking and out of the box, metaphorically, of temporal thinking is space. So the astronauts see everything in relationship, but they're looking in the wrong place for connection. Well, the moon is connected to the Earth, connected to Mars, without, you know, it's a cold idea of Western logic to find connection rather than a cultural ideas of relationship. So he's staying within the civilization of reason and temporality. This is a good way to go out with this talk, this conversation. But I think this is sort of a thought that we need to understand. And I want to hear your thoughts on what I just said and even the whole conversation.
Wow. Well, I'm always, you know, I always love to have these conversations with you. And, you know, they meander and they move and they take on a life of their own, because we don't set an agenda. We don't set discussion topics. We just discuss, right? It's in the same way as like we're not doing a thing. We're just want to hear. We're letting each other think and express from the point that was just not even a point, from just the conversation topic that we're meandering down. So I'm always grateful for these because it gets my way of thinking more flexible or more open to different thoughts outside of any kind of belief system. So thank you again. And but I would just say it just feels like you know, I sometimes want to offer like some kind of, if people are listening, what are they asking questions about? What can I do differently? What are the tangible things I can do? And it, you know, because that's where my brain goes to, but I want to like push back against that just for a minute and just encourage people to, rather than to go out and do something, we have all of these abilities to sense and perceive. I mean, I've heard that the Aboriginal people, that they have not, they believe that there's 99 senses. We have 5, according to what we're accustomed to believing, 5 senses. But thinking about life and creation over time is one of those beautiful senses that, yeah, you know, I've heard that the Aboriginal do believe is one of their 99, if not more, senses that they have. So I just want to like remind, maybe even in a way of saying it, I'm saying it to myself and remind myself, well, it's not about doing something, but understanding what is the source of the creation that is all around us. And some of these are concepts that we've held on to that really, that we believe in are the truth. Time, space. And when we get caught in these limited time, space way of thinking, then we're going to always stay in these two dimensions of our perceived reality. So breaking those barriers, those boundaries of time and space, I'm not sure how, I couldn't necessarily point anybody how to do that. But I would say that religions are not going to offer that. Governments are not going to offer that. But Earth, Mother Earth is offering that and giving it freely all the time without asking anything in return. And I was with my dear friend recently, and she said, oh, I was sitting and I felt the Earth rotating. And I said, wow, you know, that's incredible, because there's some people whose way of thinking culturally says if people don't feel the Earth rotating, that speaks to the sickness that they have and the lack of relationship that they have formed through their own lives or that they were brought into. So I love that idea, is that what she felt and was so moved by is something that other cultures think, wow, if you don't have that, then there's something actually, you're actually the sick one, that you haven't felt the effect of the moon, that you haven't felt the shift of the earth or the rotation of the earth, or haven't sensed or perceived the any of the other planets, or any of the just the earth and the core and the and how she's engaging with us regularly. And so in a way it kind of makes me a little sad, because it took me so long to also experience that feeling, because I have. You sit on earth enough, long enough, and you feel and you cry and you bleed and you cry out and you spin with her, you move with her, you cry with her. You start to understand, you start to feel that. And so that's the sadness in me, that it's like, oh, I wasn't raised in a culture that was even having this discussion. But I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to sit and to feel that and experience that. Not, I wouldn't say not on my own, but with all of the beings who were there experiencing it too.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a great, great little discussion. Thank you for this, Jonathan Gonzalez. You are located out in Southern California. I don't want to say specifically where. Maybe the nature of being here and, you know, the political climate is that's the little fear there I have, is outing other people for something that they should have no fear of, right? Even Native people here in our own country, in our own lands that we have grown out of. So, but this is up for discussion for another time. And it's very honored to have you here. And maybe we can continue this. If people stayed with us and were able to hang in there this long, I congratulate you. Because I certainly can come from a, you know, like the linear part of this is, I'll have to go back and do the intro of it. It introduced Jonathan, and then that it is. And then at the ending, I'd have to say, well, this was such and such. In between, we put sometimes PSAs or community announcements. And at the end, we have a format. In an hour, we have to squeeze all that in. That, again, is that we're living in that fear, the fear of not using time, because we've totally forgotten how to feel and think spatially. So just an honor to have you here. And again, thanks again, Jonathan, for being here.
It's an honor to know you, to have spent the time that I have with you, and to have these conversations. And I'll say that I am here in Southern California. This is Coahuila Nation territory, this Coahuila Nation land here. The Morongo, the Agua Caliente, the 29 Palms, and many other members of this the Coahuila Nation here. And I just want to say one thing, because I'm going to see a friend of ours very soon, Kapiolani, and I just want to shout her out, because her father just passed, and I'll be going over there to see them. And he was living with he's good friends with Stephen Newcomb, and we'll be catching up with them. And I just wanted to send my love and my heart out to them as they process this transition and his beautiful life. And so we'll be going down to Saiquan territory near the Kumayai, down in San near San Diego. But I'm just always so grateful, and I know so many people are so grateful for your words and your efforts in this world, in this life. And so thank you for allowing me to take part in this. I'm just a baby, and I'm still learning, and that's what it feels like. It's about just the process, the journey of awakening, because I won't say I'm awake yet. but I got one eye open now, so I'm, you know, I'm on the I'm in that awake dream state.
This is First Voices Radio. My name is Tioxin Ghost Horse. Tioxin Ake Wachyang Tilo. Thanks, Jonathan, again.
Pomatun Teneko Kakona.
This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.
Hoy lunes 10 de febrero del 2025 aquí.